Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this now March the 14th on the West Coast and March the 15th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network and appreciate you tuning in as well. Been listening to everything that's been going on around the world, of course. We continue to pray for those who have passed on, or those who have lost loved ones or suffered injuries, great financial loss, and had to endure the terror of what is going on in Japan, in the Southeast Asia area, we could say, and as well as in other parts of the world. Many lives have been lost due to the tsunami, the earthquake, or I should say earthquakes themselves have wreaked devastation throughout Japan, as you well know if you've been listening to the media. Mainstream seems to be toting two lines to the story. We've heard a lot about the amount of radiation that is heading our way through the jet stream. It has been measured by different sources. One report I heard this evening actually said that the amount of radiation detected from the second nuclear facility that is leaking radiation was measured to be approximately 40 miles away from the facility and in the amount of about 10% of the average X-ray. Now, it is radiation, but that would hardly have an impact on the populace anywhere in the world. If it was dangerous, then we should all stop getting X-rays. Simple as that, because you're going to get 100 times that. Well, at least 10 times, we'll say. 10 times that amount, or 100% of what they're using as the basis for measuring the actual leakage that was detected. Now, the event, as I have described it last week on this show, appears to have been natural, but as Rahm Emanuel says, never let an opportunity go to waste, especially one as devastating as a 9.0 earthquake. Now, he didn't say that, the 9.0 earthquake, but he did imply that where there's tragedy, where there's great loss, certainly try to incorporate your long-term goals and your short-term plans into the scenario, if at all possible, to get the biggest bang for your buck. Now, there is also, on the alternative side, a tremendous ramping up of the fear level on the basis of sunspots, emanations from the sun. Then we have Elamine, which is supposed to be an asteroid that is making its way between the sun and the earth, and it's going to wreak havoc on the earth, as if we don't have enough havoc. We need help from the universe in that regard. And then we're hearing stories of Planet X. I can tell you neither one of those two stories is true. And I can certainly tell you that there is a profit motive, and the reason they're talking about the radiation and the asteroid and Planet X Nibiru, whatever you want to call it, is because they want to ramp up fear. It's as simple as that. And like a song that has words and has no meaning, I guess you could call that simply a melody. That was George Duke with his song, A Melody. A Melody. No lyrics, per se. Very nice song. Sounds nice, pleasing, it makes you feel good, sort of like what you're getting out of the White House these days. I'm reminded of a piece that was done during Dr. Orly Tate's lawsuit against the usurper, the illegal alien sitting in the White House, and a piece written by John Christian Ryder. It was called "Who Uses Phony Social Security Numbers?" Now, the reason I'm pointing this out is because we have somebody in the White House who actually has made a habit of that. And you're believing, you're trusting, you're listening to the sputum coming out of Washington, D.C. about how great the finance, or the economy, the financial community is doing. Well, the financial community is stealing trillions of dollars, as we say so many nights on this show, 5 days a week, month after month after month, year after year. And I'm reminded of some information that came out. I had discovered this, and Orly Tate's had discovered this as well. Numerous Social Security numbers. And the excuse is that, well, they're running out. Were they running out of them in 1961 or 1971 or even 1981 when Obama arrived in Jackson, New Jersey? And I'm quoting from Mr. Ryder's article. He used Social Security number 485-40-5154. Now, it shouldn't break any law to release that number because the person who owned that number is deceased. That's my comment. Mr. Ryder goes on to say, which was issued in 1954 or 55 in Iowa to Lucille Ballantyne. Ballantyne was born on December 22, 1912, and died on September 13, 1998. It appears that three people are using 350-60-2302. Daniels tied the card to Michelle Obama. Sankey linked it to Barack Obama. Both Obamas and whomever the original SSN holders was are attached to that number. What is most interesting is that among the 39 Social Security cards that Sankey and Daniels discovered linked to the Obama family Social Security numbers for Obama, his wife, and his mother, Stanley Ann Dunham, who I've proven, by the way, is not his mother, none of them were issued in Hawaii, which in itself, according to Tate, is evidence of Obama's foreign birth. So all you need to get a Social Security card is a birth certificate and one other form of ID. One wonders why, since Obama claims he has his original long-form birth certificate. It appears he has gone through his entire life using Social Security cards, which formerly belonged to someone else. Now, end of quote. Do you think, folks, that what you're being told about what's going on in Japan, whether or not there was an earthquake or multiple earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, tsunamis, countless hundreds, maybe even thousands of deaths? In fact, this evening I heard, along with the report I referenced at the top of the show, that some 2,000 bodies washed ashore. Doesn't say where the bodies came from. I suppose if you saw the images of the swirling waters, they could have come from the land, gone out to sea, and then back to the shore. It's a travesty, and yet, this is all eventually designed to lead up to a point where we have this globalist takeover of the entire world and humanity dominated as slaves without chains, where you will be probably charged for breathing and exhaling. One wonders the day when you are charged for your crepitations. With that, and by no means do I mean to segue to tonight's guest, but I'm finished with that topic. he hosts his own radio show on the microeffect.com. It's called The Story Behind the Story. He is an author, journalist, researcher, talk show host, and a naturopathic doctor as well as a PhD. And his name is Dr. A. Truat, my regular Monday night guest. Dr. Ott, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. I hope the computer still works for me. It's been off and on all day, ins and outs with my internet connector as usual. So hopefully we'll be able to get through the show okay. I enjoyed listening to your monologue. Interesting information as always. I don't know if you there's a an article that I just received by an investigative reporter named Greg Palast. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw this about Tokyo Electric and the U.S. nuclear plants being planned to be built in Texas. But it's quite an interesting article. I think he's onto something here.
Yeah, I used to read, actually, to answer your question or comment to your remarks. Oh, by the way, if I can backtrack for 1 second, Lucille Ballantyne was the mother of Harry Ballantyne. Now, who is Harry Ballantyne? Would you like to take a guess?
I have no idea.
He was the chief actuary of the Social Security Administration. Kind of interesting,
okay.
Huh? you think Obama called Mrs. Ballantyne Grandmama by any chance? And the fact that she died in 1998 would have meant that she was approaching her 86th birthday, so she died at age 85. Yet, if you look in certain databases where you can look for people, she's listed at age 102. We're not even up to 102 years from her date of birth on December 22nd, 1912. Don't you find that interesting?
Hmm.
That's what happens in the world of money laundering and corruption. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah, the story he puts out is quite amazing. He's been researching the Tokyo Electric Power Company, the company that actually manufactures the nuclear power plants that are now causing problems in Tokyo or Japan. Evidently, there was a $4 billion loan guarantee for two new nuclear power plants to be built and operated in the Gulf Coast of Texas by this Tokyo Electric Power Company called TEPCO, T-E-P-C-O. And he gives the facts out, as he says, facts about TEPCO and the industry that you won't hear or haven't heard on mainstream media. His resume shows that he's worked in the field of nuclear power plants. He's kind of turned into a whistleblower. But he writes, and I quote, "Nuclear plants the world over must be certified for what in the industry is called SQ or seismic qualification. That is," he says, "the owners swear that all components are designed for the maximum conceivable shaking event, be it from an earthquake or an exploding Christmas card from Al-Qaeda." And he writes, quote, "The most inexpensive way to meet your SQ, your seismic qualification, is to lie. The industry," he says, "does it all the time. The government team I worked with caught them once in 1988 at the Shoreham plant in New York. Correcting the SQ problem at Shoreham would have cost a cool billion, so engineers were told to change the tests from failed to passed. The company that put in the false safety report, Stone and Webster, now the nuclear unit of Shaw Construction, which is working with TEPCO to build the Texas plant." He says, there's more. He said, "Last night I heard CNN reporters repeat the official line that the tsunami disabled the pumps needed to cool the reactors, implying, of course, that water unexpectedly got into the diesel generators that run the pumps. These safety backup systems, he writes, are the EDGs, in nuke speak, emergency diesel generators. That they didn't work in this emergency is like a fire department telling us they couldn't save a building because it was on fire. What, he writes, what dim bulbs designed this system? One of the reactors dancing with death at Fukushima Station 1 was built by Toshiba. Toshiba was also an architect of the emergency diesel system. Now, he says, now you need to be afraid. Obama's $4 billion bailout in the making is called the South Texas Project. It's been sold as red, white, and blue way to make power domestically with a reactor from Westinghouse, a great American brand. However, the reactor will be made substantially in Japan by that company that bought the U.S. brand name Westinghouse, which is Toshiba. He writes, I once had a Toshiba computer. I only had to send it in once for warranty work. However, it's kind of hard to mail back a reactor with the warranty slip inside the box if the fuel rods are melted and sinking halfway to the Earth's core.
Yes. It's been a while since I've read anything by Greg Palast, but he's always pretty much on point. It seemed a couple of years ago, 2-3 years ago, that he was mysteriously silenced, and then he started coming out. I don't know if he was in prison or they just told him to tone it down a bit. What goes through my mind is let's presume he's very accurate. Then they had to make sure that there was enough damage to this facility so that they could collect on insurance to pay for the facility in Texas, seems to me. Maybe they didn't have flood insurance, you know, like New Orleans. You have any thought on that, or?
Well, again, it's interesting that this $4 billion Texas plant still is going forward, given the reactors. What's happened in Japan? It flat out is not doing what it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Now, this tsunami and an earthquake should not have caused these reactors to fail.
No, and also usually when there's a nuclear meltdown, there's not an explosion, and it appears that there was sabotage, in my estimation.
He writes that the Obama administration is planning a total of $56 billion in low interest, basically gift loans for nuclear reactors all over America. He says, again, if we turn to America's own nuclear contractors, will we be safe? Well, two of the melting Japanese reactors, including the one whose building blew sky high, were actually built by General Electric of the good old U.S. of A. So it's...
It's about putting more money in the pockets of their cronies. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, and then the stocks and the put options and all of that. And then if they want a false flag event, they blow up a nuclear facility like they're doing now.
Right.
I don't see it any other way. Do I need to go back and read some more Social Security numbers he's using?
Well, again, the I can't. I'm trying to put my hand on the exact WikiLeaks document that came out last month. I remember talking about it. I've got so doggone many emails to search through. That it was outlining the 11th of March as an event contract date. Okay, just by itself, that intercepted cable from the I believe it was the Chinese ambassador telegram to into the London offices. It just mentions an event contract and the dates of date of 3/11. What most people looking at that cable wouldn't understand what an event contract pertains to. But I submit it. It's just merely an event that's made to look like a natural disaster problem. So really trying to find out who was behind it is the big million-dollar question here.
Well, it's like, I'll go back to Hurricane Katrina. If you remember, there wasn't the storm surge that was expected. They didn't have the complete damage that was desired. So what did they do? They blew up the levees and basically flooded most of the area. And those folks that would have gotten compensated for the wind damage and that damage related to what happens when the wind starts knocking down light poles and throwing them through buildings and houses or signage and every stop signs, vehicles, they're going to collect insurance. But most of those people, and they know this, they can look at the numbers, they can look at the policies, just run everything through a computer and realize, hey, you know, most of the people don't have flood insurance. So it was plan B to make sure that they were disqualified, because one cannot determine at that point when the water is up to the roof lines of the houses, what actually caused the damage. It was a matter of convenience for them and inconvenience for the homeowners. Again, it's just about making money and protecting those that were in a position to reap huge rewards for their corruption. And then we discover put options after that. Is there any doubt what's going on? This is sort of the same thing, but there seems to be a political message as well, doesn't there, as far as Japan is concerned?
Indeed. Yes, indeed. Then I reported on my show again today, but also on Friday, Don, the debt system of Japan is much, much worse than even in America. There's the reports, and we're talking about people in the banking industry in Japan before this natural disaster, there was the average central banking debt of Japan averages a whopping 7.5 million yen for every citizen of Japan. That's an amazing mountain of debt. I just wonder if this is not just a take it out and start over type of a situation by the central bankers.
Mm-hmm. Were they heavily invested in U.S. property or U.S. companies? Or for that matter, treasury bonds, to your knowledge?
No, they were pretty much a safe haven for the Pacific Rim countries, but the banks were so far leveraged out, just again so heavily over leveraged. It was just basically, there's no other way to go but to have a start over.
Yeah. Well, I want to underscore, I don't know how much we can talk about this tragedy, but there is an aspect of it that certainly appears to be natural on the basis of the depth of the earthquake and the magnitude of the earthquake. But then we had a series of aftershocks, and we had a lot of extra damage to the buildings. We had talked, and I say we, myself and some other friends of mine that know some people in Japan, we talked to some people who were outside of the Tokyo area. They were further south and away from a lot of the damage that was suffered there in Tokyo. And when they returned to their houses and apartments, they noticed that there was a lot of damage inside the buildings, much more than the buildings themselves. A lot of broken glass, broken dishes, and the fragile items that get tossed about. Bookshelves tumbled, things smashed, you know, the electronics pretty much down the tubes. It only takes just a brief jolt to throw something off a shelf in an earthquake. When I spent time in Southern California, there was an average of 3,000 quakes a year, and those were mild, but occasionally there would be some big ones, and I went through several large ones, particularly the Whittier quake, even though the magnitude, I think, was around a 6.7 with a follow-up 6.5 aftershock, and then slowly decreasing over the next few weeks and even months. There was a lot of initial damage. The quake lasted about 45 seconds, and much of the damage was felt several hundred miles away. They felt the quake in San Francisco, and that says a little bit about the nature of the quake. That we were told that was, if I recall, it was somewhere between 10 and 20 kilometers in depth. And they called it the Whittier quake because that was the epicenter. In Japan, it rattled. The first quake rattled for about 2 minutes, and that's a heck of a lot more damage that's occurred. Many thousands of times more energy is released in such an event. So you can imagine. But the fear-mongering is the thing that gets me. They've got everybody worried about tsunamis, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't be prepared, but what hit the United States was minimal, other than some ports in Southern California that suffered a lot of boat damage and of course, water damage because it did was much higher in height than what hit to the north. Moving up towards Washington State and into southwest Canada, the waves ranged anywhere from a foot and a half to a foot higher than normal. So that was minimal. It could do that on a sunny day with certain wind, for example, pushing the waves. So there was a lot of fear being thrown out there. And then you throw into the mix these astronomical events, lining up of planets, and we've got planets coming after the Earth and asteroids coming after the Earth. I'd say if that's the case, forget about the Illuminati. There's nothing they can do to stop it. Why even worry about it? Just wait till it's time to go. You can't stop it. But, you know, what's your take on that? Do you see it the same way, that this is a lot of senseless fear-mongering?
Well, I think so in some ways, Don. But in other ways, I'm still maintaining this was a planned event. There's just there's so much evidence. Again, the HAARP magnetometer readings shows it was just absolutely going crazy. High amounts of probably some estimates of over a billion watts of energy directed on some point on the Earth. Okay. Just you look at all of the major calamity events; they parallel with the HAARP installation magnetometer readings going crazy. So, why Japan, and for what purpose is the question? This article in I've just posted it on my website tonight. Uh, is is an amazing story that I remember reading this and tucking it away back last year, and I commented about it briefly on my show last April or May. This is quite amazing in many ways. Let me just share with you. It's entitled "The Coming Economic Collapse of Japan and Why You Should Be Extremely Concerned About It." This was in May of 2010, Financial Times. It didn't get any legs at all in America that I could see. I mean, it's just very few people talked about it. This is one of those elephants in the living room that nobody seems to want to be talking about. But it reads, "Most Americans pay very little attention to what is going on in the economies of other nations, but they really should. The reality is that in today's global economy, what is happening on the other side of the world can have a dramatic impact on the U.S. economy. In particular, the ongoing implosion of Japan's economy should greatly concern us all. Why? Japan is the third biggest economy in the world and is one of America's most important trading partners. If Japan experiences a total economic collapse, it will create a tsunami of financial panic around the globe." Funny they should use that word. It said, "In fact, it is likely that a default by the government of Japan would plunge the world into such an economic nightmare that the American dream would quickly vanish for millions of American families." So just how close is Japan to total financial collapse? Well, Fitch Ratings reports that Japan's gross public debt has now reached 201% of GDP and is likely to continue to pile up into very dangerous territory for the foreseeable future. It is estimated that this gigantic mountain of debt amounts to 7.5 million yen, as I said before, for every person living in Japan, every man, woman, and child now. Needless to say, this is extremely troubling. Japan has the highest level of public debt ratio to gross domestic product, GDP, of any of the industrialized nations. Japan is literally drowning in red ink. Meanwhile, even with all of the massive government spending that has caused all of this debt, Japan's economy still continues to implode at a frightening pace. Japan's discouraging battle with deflation dragged into its 13th straight month in March, a year ago March, as prices there continued to decline and the unemployment rate rose sharply. In fact, the number of unemployed in Japan totaled 3.5 million in March. This represents a 4.5% rise from the same period a year ago. You see how this is kind of really paralleling America?
Mm-hmm.
It really is amazing. In an attempt to combat this economic lethargy, the Japanese government has tried to spend its way into prosperity despite plummeting tax revenues and soaring welfare costs. It simply isn't working. So the government of Japan has found itself caught in a spiral of borrowing ever-increasing amounts of money. Hideo Kumano, the chief economist at Dai-ichi Life Research Institute, says that the only way that Japan can keep from going bankrupt is to keep borrowing more money. And who do they borrow the more money from? Who's the central bank that they keep borrowing from? It's the Fed Reserve boys. Japan's revenue, Hideo Kumano says, quote, "Japan's revenue is roughly 37 trillion yen and debt is 44 trillion yen in fiscal 2010 alone. Its debt-to-budget ratio is more than 50%.
Now, what does that equate to true in terms of dollars? I'm not up on the yen today.
I'm not sure. I think the yen is pretty close to the dollar. It's I'm not sure. I'm really not. I haven't checked that the FX markets, but for a while it was very very similar in the ratios.
This is interesting. I made a very interesting find, and what you're telling me about Greg Palast's article is actually ringing in my ears right now because of something that I discovered. But
okay,
we can go into that in a minute if you want. I don't know if you had more.
I just looked up real quickly. It's actually one Japanese yen is actually a tenth of a dollar. So it's quite disparate, actually. One Japanese yen actually, wait, hold that, 0.1 U.S. dollars.
0.1. Hmm.
Yeah, so it's free fall.
Yeah, I can remember when the dollar was something like 100 yen to the dollar.
Yeah.
Did you recall that? That's some years ago, but
yeah.
How would that play out if you were David Rockefeller?
Well, there's simply what I'm getting at here. If you've got these bankruptcy proceedings, and here's what Kumano says. In fact, according to Kumano, if the government of Japan did not keep borrowing massive amounts of money, but also if the central bankers refused to keep allowing them to borrow, it's projected it would go bankrupt by spring 2011.
Hmm.
Fortunately, the financial implosion of Japan is not likely to happen that soon. He says, why? Well, for now, they're able to borrow lots of money at very low rates. Up to this point, the government of Japan has been able to borrow money again from the central bank at ultra-low rates of around 1.3% for 10-year bonds, drawing on a huge savings pool from its own citizens. But that savings pool will not last indefinitely, and the savings pool is tied to, you know, the economy being valid. Now with this earthquake and the problems, that it's just not going to happen. Hmm. We have all seen what happened when Standard & Poor's cut its rating on Greek debt, and Japan's economy is much, much larger than Greece's. When a debt crisis does happen in Japan, it will happen very, very quickly. And get this. According to Kumano, there will likely come a, quote, tipping point when world markets will finally recognize that the government of Japan simply cannot afford to finance its debt any longer. When you start to see world headlines about a crisis in Japan, hold on to your hats, because that could be the start of something really, really bad for the world economy. So, are we reading about a crisis in Japan today? That's what I'm getting at here. This is much, much more than just some economic nuclear fallout coming from some reactors. I think this is a meltdown of the world economy. I think this is the first domino falling.
Mm-hmm. Well, you may wonder what I was alluding to a moment ago. You recall a film that came out basically 2007 by producer Aaron Russo?
Right.
Okay. The film was called, for those listeners out there that don't recognize the name, Aaron Russo became a film producer. He was credited for inventing the bikini. He owned a very successful, let's say, rock music venue in the city of Chicago, even though he was born in New York. And then he when he died, he was living in Los Angeles, and he had produced probably his most famous movie was Trading Places, the one that featured Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd. What's her name? Why am I drawing a blank now? Jamie Lee Curtis was also in that. They didn't have an axe in that movie, though, like in Halloween. He also was Bette Midler's business manager, and he intimated that he was in love with Bette, but she couldn't see the two of them getting together other than the business relationship they had. Aaron was known to be a freedom fighter, a patriot, at the end of his life. He died of cancer, and he had just returned from Germany maybe 2 months prior to his passing, and said he felt better than he had felt in a long time. Now, I don't know if he had undergone chemotherapy or not. Had he, that likely might have been the cause. Maybe he was suffering too much, and maybe it was too advanced at that point, really, for him to have a turnaround. But I was his national theatrical screening coordinator. I would assist those that were interested in having the film shown in the theater, work out the details and the promotion of the event and the acquisition of the film itself. And I had to coordinate things between those that were interested in showing the movie and Aaron's production company, because there was a fee for that, which is right. Anyway, if you produce a movie and you show it in theaters and people are going to see it, you have you're entitled to recoup your costs. And what he does with the costs, I guess, is his business. But I started actually this morning when I woke up, I had some thoughts to go down that rabbit hole and look a little bit deeper, and I discovered an article that I hadn't even read. I learned of Aaron's death through the people that I associated with as a volunteer with his organization. And there were certain aspects of the movie that didn't exactly seem to ring true to me. One, and I, you know, this is my opinion. He intimated that he was approached by Nicholas Rockefeller and asked to join the Illuminati. Of course, he didn't use that term, you know, come join us. You'll be set for the rest of your life. You know, you won't have to struggle. Everything will be given to you that you can imagine and more. And I didn't know him to be that kind of person, but I wondered if the story was really true. And from what I've discovered, many of the people who were involved with him are actually operating out of Chicago, not Los Angeles, or not this group of volunteers. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about why it was so important to get this movie, America, Freedom to Fascism, out there for people to see it. It was as if it was a prophetic statement rather than a warning. Now it's presented as a warning. This is what they plan to do, chip you, track you, and showing the illegality and the unlawfulness of the Federal Reserve, although it's touted to be, in fact, in the article, they basically say that it was an expose on the IRS. Well, that was a small part of the film. He did address that issue for 10 or 15 minutes. But what's interesting is the people who were connected behind the scenes, and these are people who had direct contact with him, are associated with the Tennessee Valley Authority.
Hmm.
think about that now. In light of what you just told me and our listening audience about this Greg Palast article.
Interesting.
It seems to fit. Now, I ask myself, did he know that? Well, he was dying. I don't think he had to know it. He died at age 64. He could have easily had 20, 25 more years added to his life had he not come down with cancer. And we might have found out the real answer. But certainly all evidence indicates that the people who were involved in this are actually involved in setting up the human resources for everything that's to come. Much has already been put in place. And it actually tracks back to the Nazi Party through one of the names that comes up. And this is a survivor of World War II who is alleged to have been one of the conspirators behind the beer hall putsch to assassinate Hitler. And he was tried at Nuremberg, but not found guilty and released. Eventually given a position with NATO in Europe, and then came to the United States and worked in Washington, D.C., in that capacity. It's amazing. What goes around comes around, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And strange things happened for sure with Russo in the last few months of his life. He, as you know, Don, went to Germany, received some alternative therapies that seemed to be working very well for him. Then it just kind of went downhill rapidly, very similar to our friend Don Harkins.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, one of the things that caught my attention and actually, it's the anticipation, the expectation that I'm going to get to the truth on whatever it is I'm looking at. And that some of the names that were quoted were not quoted in their entirety. Certain names. Say if you're quoting the name of a woman and you use her maiden name instead of her married name, or you use two-thirds of her name, in other words. And that caught my attention right away, and so I knew where I should look, and the trail revealed itself immediately. And there were so many evident footprints on the trail that you couldn't see the footprints. If you get my meaning, it wasn't like breadcrumbs, you know, Little Red Riding Hood.
Yeah.
And I think this is significant because they've been talking about pollution. They've been talking about alternative energy sources, and it's just more the same old, isn't it? They're not talking about advanced technologies. These are very dangerous technologies. It's almost like they want to build these things so that they can sabotage them down the road. This wouldn't be the first time that this has happened.
Indeed, and I just go back, and you know, I know we're getting close to the end of the time here, but the quote by Clinton's Secretary of Defense, another Ashkenazi Khazarian, William S. Cohen, the Secretary of Defense. Do you remember this quote? Let me just share it to our listeners, Don. He made this in a press conference report. I heard it myself. I go back, and it's quite stunning. Monday, April 28th of 1997, 8:45 a.m., here's what he said, quote, when he was asked a question by the press corps about what the biggest threat to world peace and security is during, you know, the decade of the 90s. Secretary of Defense William Cohen lets the cat out of the bag here, Don. Quote, he says, there are Some reports, for example, that some countries have been trying to construct something like an Ebola virus that would be a very dangerous phenomenon, to say the least. So we're talking about, he lets get out of the bag about a killer virus, okay? Well, yeah, some countries are. It's called Washington, first of all. And then he says, Alvin Toffler has written about this in terms of some scientists in our laboratories trying to devise certain types of pathogens that would be ethnic specific so that they could just eliminate certain ethnic groups and races, and others are just designing some sort of engineering, some sort of insects that can destroy specific crops. And here's the key. Others are engaging even in an eco type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes and volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. How much more do we have to know? Secretary of Defense himself, this is exact words. I'm trying to, if I can just find the video and post it on YouTube, it'd be fantastic.
Was he in Washington when he said that? Or
he is, yes. he was in a press conference, I believe it was Washington.
Huh.
Last sentence, he says, quote, so there are plenty of ingenious minds out there that are at work finding ways in which they can wreak terror upon other nations. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts, and that's why this is so important.
Wow. In my first year of broadcasting, I had Dr. Larry Wayne Harris on the show. He authored a book, and in fact, he's doing research at the Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio, still today. He intimated, not just in his book, but in his interview, the book again is Biological Warfare, that he was getting calls from the Middle East from former associates, students that were in his classes that said, wait till you see what we've devised, what we're going to bring to America. And, of course, he was describing the various pathogens that they were developing. And I had discussed Ebola Restin, if you remember. I can't remember the name of the book. I couldn't during that interview either. But there was a lady researcher that worked at the labs where they were injecting simians with Ebola. And, of course, they were trying to see if they could develop a cure. They discovered a cave in Central Africa. I think it may have been in Kenya. I'm not 100% on that. But they found that when they walked in this particular cave that had bat guano, people that went in there came out and eventually died. And it's quite a horrible death. And this female researcher in Reston was exposed accidentally to it, whether it was a tear in gloves or her protective clothing, I don't know. But when they would exit the lab, as they were exiting the lab, there was a sensor that they passed through. And if they were contaminated, the alarm went off. And she had been working for several years on this, and suddenly one day her whole life flashed before her eyes. The alarm went off. Fortunately, she didn't come down with anything, but they ended up having to – they probably burned the place down eventually. But they had thousands of monkeys over the years that were being tested. I understand there may have been such a lab in the Louisiana area as well, in this country, and who knows where else. I'm sure underground bases, they're probably giving Ebola to tadpoles just to see what they can create. So, you know, that topic's been out there for quite some time. And I think I read the book somewhere around 1990 or 91. Came on the heels of this statement. You said the Cohen's quote was in 1988, did you say?
1997, Doug.
Oh, 1997.
Yeah, for some April 28th of 1997.
Hmm. Well, we know prior to that. I know I read that book, you know, some years before what you're saying, definitely. So that information was out there, but that he would put that in a speech. Who was that speech given to, or was that just mainstream media?
I believe it was a mainstream, there was a some kind of a debriefing going on about the Iraq, Saddam Hussein problems, you know, was right. That's about the same time as Monica Lewinsky's scandal, if you remember correctly, when he was facing impeachment, yada, yada. So Cohen was kind of running interference as they were talking about the bombing campaign of Baghdad, if you remember that correctly, back then.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So as I was watching that, I was just stunned because about that time is when we get the funding for Taubenberger, okay, to go and do the research to recreate the killer influenza virus of 1918. Same time frame beginnings. It took Taubenberger 4 or 5 years to get the breakthrough.
Yeah, would you share with our listening audience, I think you revealed this on one of our past shows early on when you first came on Evident Footprints, about the discovery of, and the, let's say, the rebirth of the swine flu. I think you intimated that story, did you not?
I did, yeah. See, that...
That's just worth repeating.
This team of microbiologists led by this a gentleman who just happens to be funded by Israeli interest, AIPAC group, and he gives quarterly reports and updates to their meetings on this progress in the labs of Fort Detrick, Maryland. And his team searched the entire world for surviving viruses of the 1918 killer. They're exhuming bodies in England, World War I era, trying to find some surviving tissue. And they finally hit pay dirt, so to speak, up in Brevik, Alaska.
Yes.
And a large Inuit, heavyset Inuit Eskimo woman was, her corpse was buried quite shallow in the permafrost, and it kept it pretty much intact. And they hit pay dirt. They found the samples, the DNA of a live virus. Now, the team had this supercomputer. In 1994, 95, the headlines had this, the supercomputer could now track the genetic genome codes of anything and basically do genetic morphing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The supercomputer to do that, you know, just there's billions of possible, you know, connections to meld together. Okay. So, and they need a supercomputer to do that. And of course you broke the story with Orly Tate's, husband being that connection to Novartis and that supercomputer, which is also just a very small world.
And that was posted, if I may interrupt just briefly, that was posted on a Chinese website.
Right, China was working hand in glove with these vaccine manufacturers, for heaven's sakes. Well, Taubenberger, it takes him, I believe, 6-7 years to finally get the sequencing mapped out into where they can really start cloning these genes, and the announcement is made right at 2003, 2004, in the biological journals that they've successfully mapped this killer gene. It's like the explanation given for doing this was to create a vaccine for it. That's absolutely insane logic. How can anybody believe that garbage? You have a virus that is flat out destroyed. It's gone the way of an extinct dodo bird. It's gone the way of a velociraptor dinosaur, right? It's like saying, let's clone and rebuild a velociraptor so we can test a stun gun on it, especially designed for velociraptors. I mean, why bring back a killer, nasty thing just to test a protection against it, okay? Or let's say we make an anti-velociraptor bite-proof suit, okay? We need to bring back some velociraptors to test this stuff out on. It's ridiculous, but that's what's was sold to the scientific community. But the big pharma saw this again as another way to make billions of dollars in vaccines, and it's just funny. Just months after Taubenberger makes his declaration to the AIPAC lobby, suddenly we have the announcement on the floor of the United Nations in New York that the world is due for a influenza pandemic, just like 1918 again. And that started the whole pandemic flu hype. Mm-hmm. The announcement was not made until after Taubenberger announced the success of this killer virus. Absolutely, clearly, a hoax and a con.
Yes. Now, I'm going to read something, if you don't mind, from my article that I published in the Idaho Observer and on my website on August 4th, 2009. That happened to have been the no-legged Mac Daddy's birthday. So this was my birthday present to him. I found this posted on a Chinese website, and I included the Chinese text there as well. Daylight CIS, which is Daylight Chemical Information Systems, announces Descartes. Contact Joseph Tates, Daylight Chemical Information Systems, gives a phone number and a fax number, email address, and a website. Mind you, Dr. Tates, after this was published, denied that her husband had anything to do with this company or Novartis. Mission Viejo, California, USA, July 14th, 2000. Daylight Chemical Information Systems, Inc., USA, today introduces a new addition to the array of Daylight software products. Descartes, an application using the unique extensibility features of Oracle 8, designed to fully integrate the molecular structures and reactions in an Oracle 8 database server environment. Now, think about this now, folks. As an integrated module, Descartes does not require any callouts or other operations outside of the Oracle server in order to perform its functions. Descartes delivers the speed, capacity, and performance of Daylight tools throughout the organization. Use of Descartes with the Oracle 8 server unlocks the access of existing Oracle applications and tools such as SQL, PL, SQL, Java, C, etc. to the array of chemical information. They go on to say that they can compute up to 9 million different combinations. And they can basically just enter all these into the database and pull out which one they want. Now, when you consider that, and I don't recall you having mentioned that they sent an indigenous person, an Eskimo, up to this area to go retrieve this sample. So they had to have known where it was. They merely instructed him to go get it. And he took the body back to a freezer, if I remember correctly, in his home. He cut it up, hacked it up, and put it in the freezer. And so exposed himself to it. I mean, what a story. Mm-hmm. This is not by accident. These things don't happen by accident. And the fact that they left the corpse in a place where they could instruct someone where to go. Alaska's a pretty big place. Okay, I consider myself to be a pretty good dowser. And in fact, I don't even need to use dowsing tools to douse. That's how advanced my dowsing is. Was this man a dowser? Was he an intuitive, or was he instructed where to go? And that it would have just been frozen, as you said, in the ground, and he could go dig up the corpse and take it back and then eventually deliver it. And I think you mentioned some amount of money also that he was paid for doing that. Wasn't all that much for risking his life, as I recall. But to deny now, Mr. Tate, Joseph Tate, is described as the chief executive officer of Daylight. How can anyone deny that? It's his own publication. He published this. Of course, I incorporated this article into my research because it reveals exactly what's going on, what was intended. And then subsequently, I published an alert from IBM that the World Health Organization was going to make an announcement of a pandemic, which further substantiates this whole thing, that this is by design, this is planned. Then we heard all the rhetoric and all the war drums about everybody getting a vaccine because there was going to be this pandemic and it was going to wipe out the earth. Well, now everybody needs a volcano or a tsunami or an earthquake. There's really not much difference between those and these deadly vaccines. You know, this is a script that they don't even put in horror movies anymore.
Really?
Well, we have a couple more minutes if you'd like to make any closing remarks or summarize what you see going on. We covered several topics in one, but I see them as all related to one another.
Well, it's again, there's all of this this radiation fallout that's supposed to be happening. I gotta say, cesium isotopes in a steam cloud. I just, you know, there's a lot of, I've just been checking my emails in the last 10 minutes. It must be 15 or 20 from people that should know better, saying, all heck is going to break loose in the Pacific Northwest. There's this terrible toxic cloud of fallout coming. What is going on that people have to spread this type of stuff? The nuclear bombs that fell on Hiroshima and Nagasaki created a huge amount of fallout that didn't kill anybody in America that I know of, Don. The Gulf Streams are not changing. I'm just really frustrated with these doom and gloom naysayers. You know, they're first of all the toxic, huge underground plume of oil was going to kill the whole world's oceans. All of this garbage coming on when reality is 2,000 feet, oil sinks, it loses its buoyancy. I'm telling you, this is there's got to be some common sense coming up here somehow. On my show today, I had a lot of people, wanting to know what we should do for radiation. If you're concerned about radiation, like you said, Don, quit taking x-rays, for heaven's sakes. You want to talk about the danger? It's not the fallout from Japan. It's those doggone TSA body scanners.
That's actually worse than just getting a regular, like a dental x-ray or a CAT scan or something like that, you know, where they've got to use radioactive isotopes to capture a picture.
Yeah, I have my mineral company. We produce potassium and iodine in a liquid solute that goes right in the bloodstream. It strengthens and gives you the thymus protection. I recommend people, if they have to go in for x-rays, and if they absolutely must get a body scanner, you know, take a really, you know, 6 or 7, 8 dropperfuls of this liquid potassium and liquid iodine to strengthen your thymus. Well, but, you know, there's actually an email I just got, Don, from that people are saying that, that there's an alert that they want, they're asking people to leave the coastal areas of Oregon and California and Washington, for heaven's sakes. I mean, do they have any Geiger counters going crazy? I don't see that. If they're, you think if this was real, you'd have videotapes of Geiger counters going off like crazy. What's this fear-mongering do? Who's doing this?
Well, it's to divert attention from what's going on, number one, and to ramp up the fear. Now, there is an issue of an infiltration of foreign contingents from China and parts in Europe, which seem to be DynCorp-backed troops, up to 500,000 troops in our country. Many of the northwestern states, southwestern states, some of the southeastern states along the Gulf, and certain areas of the Midwest. This has been described in some prophetic visions. Dmitry Dudeman described this. They picked up chatter on this last week. And I'll be talking about this on tomorrow night's show with my guest, Dr. Greg Evenson. But this is heard. This is being heard. Foreign accents talking about their positions, and it's become quite clear that there's something afoot. While everyone's attention is on this tragedy, they're secretly shuffling troops around, as if to forewarn that we may have martial law coming again. You know, but we had these threats back in 2006, 2007, even first part of 2008, if you remember, with what was going on everywhere else in the world, particularly in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, you have all this attention that was on the Middle East just a few days ago, and all of a sudden now the whole world's looking at Japan, and now everyone's in fear that this is coming to America. See, they're having a little bit of resistance from the American people, from the patriot community, and anybody with half a brain that realizes they're not going to leave themselves defenseless against burglars in their homes or at their place of work. They're going to maintain their Second Amendment rights. And this is an attempt to create a phony, artificial scenario that is designed to take away our freedoms. That's basically what it's all about. Now, you know, just the very thought of foreign troops moving about our country. Who's committing treason here?
High treason.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, these reports are out there, and they've been confirmed by multiple sources. When I first heard about it, it was, well, you know, this is years ago I heard about this, that people had seen convoys of troops motoring through Montana into Washington State. And up in Idaho, they had been seen, again, going into Washington State. I ask myself, who's asleep at the wheel in these states that nothing's being done about this? We have the same types of intrusions. We had reports of Chinese soldiers in Arizona. And when someone would call the Border Patrol, they would notify people in Washington, and they were told to stand down, that they were sending military there, and people living in the region witnessed high fives and backslaps going on between American and Chinese soldiers. It's quite obvious what's going on here. We've written about this, you and I both, and many others, about this implementation of the Fourth Reich. Germany plots with the Kremlin. We're talking about the overthrow of the government and turning it into a communist, fascist, Zionist state. Zionism has been there for 100 years. Actually, you might as well say 230 years. But it's coming to a head here soon. Somebody's going to have to wake up. Any closing comment, Drew?
Well, just that. Just that. You know, it's a crazy time, Don, and just got to look through the insanity and just realize it's nothing. This one truth is simply that none of this happens by accident. This is not any way, shape, or form natural or any act of God. This is creation. It's a step by step plan. Mm-hmm. Again, go back to Cohen's little blip. I'm sure he didn't mean to say too much like that. I don't think he wanted to elaborate. He just let the cat out of the bag. This is real. They have the technology. We know they're utilizing this technology to cause these earthquakes. The magnetometer readings at HAARP went crazy the night of Thursday and the 24 hours before the earthquake hit. I'm here to tell you that there's going to be earthquakes on American soil, just as devastating, if not more so. Mm-hmm. That's the tragedy that they're planning. And who's ever, you know, if there's ever a time for intervention by benevolent alien forces, I mean, now is it. I mean, let's take out this HAARP installation now. I mean, not just threaten to do so. Do it. I want to see it done. That's my prayer anyway. This has got to stop. Got to stop now.
Yes. This is the, I think this is the, really the unpardonable sin against humanity, if there is one. Certainly what they're doing to really the people on this planet, and the ecosystems and all the wildlife, the creation. It's an affront to the Creator. And in closing, I would again remind people to go easy on the baked beans and cabbage. Because you'll pay for that too, eventually. Drew, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for your research. Your website, by the way, is atrueot, that's two T's on the end of ot.com. Again, atrueott.com. The show is heard Monday through Friday on the microeffect.com network, and it's called The Story Behind the Story. I want to thank you, and I look forward to your next visit on Evident Footprints next Monday.
Thanks, Scott. Don, and good night to everybody.
All right. Thanks. You have yourself a great night, and we'll talk again soon. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and Dr. A. True Watt. I want to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints over at BBS Radio. Seth Hendrick on the sound. I'd like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. As I mentioned just a few minutes ago, be sure to tune in tomorrow night when we'll be visited by Dr. Greg Evenson. Some important information coming out. and you don't want to miss that. Special thanks to all of you listeners for tuning in, and I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and please pray for the people in the Far East, and have a good night.